Good morning, and thank you for joining the ISO for this important media briefing. My name is Oscar Hidalgo. I'm the Director of Communications and Public Relations here at the ISO. Today marks a significant milestone for the ISO, and we'll be sharing with you information on the merits of creating a regional electric grid in the western United States. Joining me today is Steve Berberich. He's the President and CEO of the ISO, who will provide opening remarks, and Keith Casey, Vice President of Market and Infrastructure Development. Following Mr. Berberich, Mr. Casey will discuss the report's findings, and he will be available for questions from the media at the end of today's call. With that, I'll turn it over to Steve Berberich.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be able to speak with you today, and several of you I know, and some of you I'm sure I will know. But I'd like to talk to you today about our studies a bit, but take a step back more broadly. I think there's a pretty compelling and simple message here. The electric industry, and more broadly, I think California is really at a major inflection point right now, with significant changes both on the transmission system but also at the distributed system as we continue to add distributed generation on the system. But I think the state has the opportunity to welcome a better or better enable an entirely new paradigm consistent with our state leaders, where clean energy and economic growth become one. As the state leaders are speaking about today, at the same time we're on, I think California has the opportunity to have abundant state-based jobs as part of decarbonization of the grid. Pro Tem De Leon, author of SB 350, Speaker Anthony Rendon, and Governor Jerry Brown are all committed to the marriage of decarbonization and economic vitality. The opportunity exists now, though, to pursue those objectives aggressively, efficiently, and for California to lead the way. As seen in Europe, the value of collaborating regionally is critically important to cost-effectively and reliably integrate renewables on the system. The opportunity to run a continent-wide day-ahead market allows Germany to sell its excess generation, while Norway uses its hydro to help integrate Germany's renewables. It allows Denmark to meet 100% of its load with wind. And here in the U.S., Iowa is able to pursue an 85% regional strategy because it's part of a larger grid, the Mid-Continent ISO. Absent regional markets for excess generation in California, that power is likely to be curtailed. That's our word for shutting it off. Our studies show that we may have to shut off up to 13,000 megawatts of excess power at a time by 2020. In a regional market, we could sell that power and return those dollars to those who paid for the generation, the ratepayers. This is also valuable to those in the western region, as they'll be able to buy this power at less than they would have to pay to get carbon-based power. We also have the opportunity to optimize resources over a broader footprint, reducing the need to build new gas generation in California and through the region. That also saves money. Regionalizing the grid will allow California to go beyond a 50% renewable target. And for those in the region, they will benefit from reduced costs and facilitate the pursuit of their own higher RPS goals. Today in our studies, you'll see that a regionalized grid is good for jobs, electricity customers, and good for the environment. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Oscar. He's going to talk more about the process that we've been going through, and then over to Dr. Keith Casey, who led the effort on these studies.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. Before I turn it over to Keith Casey, I wanted to provide some background on this milestone. First, the study is a requirement of Senate Bill 350, the state's Clean Energy and Pollution Reduction Act, which was signed into law by the governor last year. The law increased California's commitment to renewable energy from 33% to 50% by 2030. In addition, SB 350 required the ISO to study how a regional energy market would impact the state in terms of job creation and retention and other economic impacts, the environment, impacts on disadvantaged communities, emissions of greenhouse gases and other air pollutants, and grid reliability and renewable integration. Today we'll share with you the key findings from these studies and discuss the benefits should California decide to regionalize its electric grid and other states in the West decide to participate. The final studies released today are a product of a public and transparent process that began in February with a two-day public workshop where we collected input on the methodology and assumptions used in the analysis. Since then, the ISO has conducted a series of public meetings and conference calls involving more than 400 stakeholders from the energy industry, regulatory agencies, utilities, consumers, and environmental advocates. At each step along the way, we've published public comments and responses, preliminary results, as well as nearly 1.8 gigabytes of underlying data that were used for the study. In addition to today's report, the ISO will release a draft proposal on the governance structure of a possible regional grid by early next week. That proposal has undergone a similar public vetting process. The study and the governance proposal will be the topic of an all-day public meeting scheduled on July 26th in Sacramento. One last thing before I turn it over to Keith, I need to clarify one point. This has been characterized by some as a merger with a neighboring utility, PacifiCorp. This is not accurate. The ISO is a public benefit corporation. We are not merging nor have plans to merge with any private utility or with any other organization. Should a utility decide to become a participant, they will do so just as other utilities we serve today, such as Southern California Edison, Pacific Gas and Electric, and San Diego Gas and Electric. Again, there's no merger contemplated in any scenario. With that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Casey to review the results of the SB 350 studies.
Thank you, Oscar. Good morning, everyone. As Oscar mentioned, these results are really the culmination of an 8-month study process that provided a lot of opportunity for public input along the way. It involved a very extensive assessment of the overall impact to California from transforming the California ISO into a regional organization. Specifically, SB 350 called for examining the overall benefits to California ratepayers, the impact on emissions of greenhouse gases and other air pollutants, the creation and retention of jobs and other benefits to the California economy, environmental impacts in California and elsewhere, impacts to disadvantaged communities in California, and the reliability and integration impacts of renewable energy resources. So to undertake this very challenging analysis, we hired a top team of consulting firms with international expertise in these areas. The Brattle Group, we engaged to lead this effort and focus on the market efficiency benefits. Energy and Environmental Economics was a firm we used to develop the renewable portfolio scenarios and assess the integration benefits. Berkeley Economic Advising and Research is a firm based in Berkeley that assessed the jobs and impact of the California economy. And finally, Aspen Environmental Group assessed the environmental impacts. The report that we released this morning is quite extensive. There are 12 volumes, a total of 688 pages. I'm sure you've all reviewed them in preparation for this call. Lots of in-depth analysis and explanations of how each of the key areas were examined. And my goal really today is to summarize the key findings. But to do that, I need to give you a little context on the study scenarios that we examined. So I want to start with the study time frames. Essentially, the study examined two time frames, 2020, which would be the earliest a regional market could start to take shape. And the two scenarios we looked at in 2020 is a current practice, which is essentially the ISO with its current operational footprint. And then we compared that to a very limited regional case that involves the ISO and PacifiCorp, who is a utility in the Northwest that has expressed interest in exploring joining this regional market. So you should think of the 2020 as really a starting point with a very small regional market that we anticipate would grow over time. The second study time period we looked at is 2030. Here we're examining a much broader regional market that includes most of the West and assumes California is achieving its 50% renewable energy goal as called for under SB 350. Of course, we don't know yet how California will precisely achieve that 50% renewable energy goal, so we had to examine three different scenarios, the first being what we call a current practice baseline, which is if the regional market doesn't take place, we assume the California ISO is operating its operational footprint as it has today, and that the 50% state's goal is met, but it's met predominantly with in-state resources. So we contrast that current practice 2030 case with two regional market scenarios. The first we call Regional 2, which assumes California achieves the 50% renewable energy goal, very similar to the current practice, predominantly in-state resources, some out-of-state resources. And then we examine a second regional case that we call Regional 3 that assumes California is achieving the 50% goal with a more regional procurement approach, particularly more out-of-state renewables and particularly more wind resources from Wyoming and New Mexico. So I want to emphasize that this study isn't trying to determine or recommend how California should meet its 50% goal. What we tried to do here is come up with some plausible scenarios for how that goal might be met and then test the value of a regional market against those scenarios. So you'll hear me in describing the benefit results refer to Regional 2 and Regional 3, and I wanted to give you that background of what those scenarios are. So I think with that background, we can move on to discuss the results. And I'll start with the annual estimated net benefits to California ratepayers. And essentially, the study estimates the annual net benefits to California ratepayers from transitioning the ISO into a regional market operator in 2030 will range from $1 billion to $1.5 billion annually, and those benefits are expected to continue beyond 2030. And those benefits are in real 2016 dollars. Those benefit numbers represent a reduction in retail rates of about 2 to 3%. And I would note the high end of this range is based on the Regional 3 scenario, which involves the more west-wide renewable procurement. And the benefits fall into four categories. The first and most substantial benefit is the regional market provides investment savings in meeting the 50% renewable energy goal. So as Steve mentioned, absent a regional market, we're very concerned that we could see large amounts of renewable energy curtailed simply because there isn't a robust enough market to ultimately find a sink for all that renewable energy. So big savings come about in the regional market by reducing renewable energy curtailment. And what that essentially means is California can meet the 50% goal by building fewer renewable projects because you can get more out of every renewable project you build by avoiding curtailments. So there's a significant capital investment savings from that. The second category is what we're calling market efficiency benefits. By virtue of running this large regional market, you're getting a more efficient dispatch of the resources on the system. You're getting more efficient utilization of the system, and that has savings to California ratepayers as well. The third category is savings from reduced capital investment in meeting future reliability needs, and this really stems from by having a larger geographical footprint, we can plan the future resource needs for the system looking at the system as a whole, which means that there can be some savings by California being able to rely on resources in other parts of the grid to meet its reliability needs by virtue of the fact that their reliability needs peak at different times of the year. And then the final area is savings in funding the ISO operation. By virtue of having a larger regional market, the cost of the ISO's annual cost of operating the ISO can be spread over a larger number of participants. So those are the four categories of savings. And of course, not surprisingly, the benefits in 2020 with a very limited regional market with just PacifiCorp are relatively small, $55 million in 2020, and most of those savings are due to reduction in ISO charges by being able to spread those costs between the ISO and PacifiCorp. So again, you think of 2020 as the very nascent start of the regional market where you're seeing the real full value proposition materialize in 2030 as both the regional footprint grows and the amount of renewables on the system grow as well. Those two effects are really driving the larger benefits you see in 2030. In terms of emissions, the study did look very closely at CO2 emissions and found that the regional market will, by 2030, help to further reduce CO2 emissions. In 2030, the study projects that the expanded regional market will reduce California CO2 emissions for the state's electricity sector by 4 to 5 million metric tons. That's about an 8 to 10% of the state's electricity sector emissions, and reduce CO2 emissions across the entire West by 10 to 11 million metric tons, which is about 3.5% of the total West-wide emissions in the electricity sector. Under the 2020 results, with the very limited regional market, we see very little change in CO2 emissions between the ISO and the ISO and PacifiCorp case. In fact, there's a very slight increase in CO2 emissions in California that translates to about a 0.3% increase, and West-wide, slight increase of about 0.6 million metric tons, which is about a 0.2% increase. Now, you need to bear in mind when we talk about these emission increases, the overall trend. If you look at where we are today to 2020 to 2030, is a significant decline in CO2 emissions as we're getting more renewables on the system over those periods. So these changes I'm talking about in 2020 are just reflecting the non-regional market case against the regional market case. But the overall picture is CO2 emissions are declining quite significantly from now through 2020 to 2030. With regard to criteria air pollutants, the study did examine emissions of NOx, SO2, and particulate matters, and essentially found that the emissions for these criteria pollutants in 2030 decline, both for the California and the rest of the West. There is, however, a slight increase in 2020 of emissions in the rest of the WEC of these criteria pollutants due to a very slight increase in coal dispatch in 2020. But overall, as we get more renewables on the system and we see further retirements of coal plants, those overall criteria pollutants go down over time to decline in 2030. In terms of the economic impacts, the study found the regional market provides benefits to the overall California economy. It looked at a broad range of metrics. Gross state product increases in 2030 under the regional market by $1.2 to $1.7 billion. The state's real economic output increases by $2.3 to $2.7 billion. And annual statewide real income increases under the regional market by $4.1 to $7.9 billion, and that translates to an increase in household real income by $300 to $550 per household by 2030. In terms of the impact of the regional market on jobs, the study found that the regional market produces more jobs for California. Under the regional 2 market scenario, it shows a net increase in jobs by 2030 of adding 19,300 jobs. And under the regional 3 scenario, that net increase is 9,900 new jobs. The study highlights some of the trade-offs in jobs that you see in the 2030 with the regional markets. Specifically, you do see some trade-off between direct construction jobs related to renewable development and increases in indirect jobs that come about by virtue of having lower retail electricity rates. And overall, the net effect is while there's some decline in renewable development jobs by virtue of the fact that you're able to achieve the 50% RPS by building fewer projects, and also the scenarios do have, especially the regional 3 scenario, does have a shift in some of the renewable development to outside of California. So you see some decline in direct construction jobs there. But in both cases, those declines are more than offset by the indirect effect that comes about by injecting more stimulus into the economy by having more disposable income for California ratepayers to spend on other goods and services that has an associated employment impact as well. With respect to the overall environmental impacts to California and elsewhere, the study looked quite comprehensively at this from the standpoint of impact on land use, biological resources, and water use, as well as, of course, on air quality. With regard to land use, effectively, the regional market has an overall reduction in land impact, largely because, again, by virtue of the regional market, you can achieve the 50% renewable goal by building fewer renewable projects, so you have a less of an impact on land use. Specifically, in the Regional 2 case, it showed a reduction in land impact of 42,600 acres. In the Regional 3 case, it showed a reduction in land development of 73,100 acres. Now, of course, in Regional 3, there is a shift where some of that development is happening more out of state, with the Regional 3 having more out of state wind development in particular. So you will see some shift in land use increase in other states other than California, and potentially some impact from building new transmission to access those resources. But overall, by virtue of building fewer resources to meet the 50% goal, the regional market has an overall impact of reducing land use impacts, and along with that, reducing use of water, particularly in California. And then with regard to the impact of water use for the natural gas units in California, we do see in 2030 a decline in the dispatch of California gas units. So that has, in addition to both favorable emissions benefits, it also reduces the water use of those natural gas units as well. So overall, the environmental impacts from developing this regional market are quite favorable. And then lastly, with respect to the impacts on disadvantaged communities, the study found that the regional market would confer economic benefits on disadvantaged communities. It found that the market would stimulate real income and job growth in California's most disadvantaged communities, particularly the Inland Valley, Greater Los Angeles, and Central Valley areas. It showed real disadvantaged community incomes would increase by essentially $170 to $340 of real annual household incomes, and that full-time employment would rise in disadvantaged communities by 1,300 to 4,600 jobs between 2020 and 2030. A regional market on the environmental side would mitigate some of the environmental impacts that disadvantaged communities might face with land use development in the vicinity of disadvantaged communities. And again, in the 2030, we see a reduction in the dispatch of California natural gas fire generators in these disadvantaged community areas. So that has further air quality benefits to them. So overall, a favorable impact to disadvantaged communities, both on the economic side and on the environmental side. And then the last category deals with the impact a regional market would have on reliability and integration of renewable resources. And the study finds that the regional market improves the integration of renewables, and the biggest benefit there, again, is being able to achieve the state's RPS goal by building fewer renewable projects and the associated cost savings with that. There's a number of reliability benefits that come from this regional market that weren't quantified but were discussed in the report. Certainly, having a larger operational footprint allows for centralized control of a larger area with better awareness of what's happening in the area. You avoid some of the challenges we have under today's structure, where we have all these balkanized grid operators throughout the West with some coordination, but not perfect coordination between them. This regional market would provide a much more improved situation in terms of being able to manage the reliability of the grid. And we also believe the regional market would allow us to better utilize the existing grid, both in terms of being able to support higher ratings on transmission paths because we have better confidence in our ability to control and manage the system. And also we find in these markets that generators have a larger incentive to better maintain their facilities and be available to be dispatched in the market because there's more opportunities. So you're able to better utilize the infrastructure that you have. And then on the planning front, we think the regional market will vastly improve how the transmission grid is planned, both for California and the rest of the West. We'll have a centralized process for doing long-term planning studies. We'll be able to identify more cost-effective solutions. And ultimately, we'll have a cost-sharing framework in place that if large regional transmission projects are found to be needed, we can assess who benefits from them and allocate the cost appropriately. So that, in a very fast-paced summary, is the key findings of the report. As Oscar mentioned, our next step in the process, it will be to hold this joint agency workshop on July 26th. That will be in Sacramento. We have details of the location and time of that on our market notice that went out today. And I guess I'll stop there and turn it back to Oscar.
Sure. Thanks, Keith. I appreciate that. Before we go to the questions, I wanted to let everybody know we covered a lot of ground today, and we're recording this call for future playback so that those that missed the call can participate, and if you choose to, if you missed anything, you can call this back up. I also want to say that this question and answer period is for media only. This call is for media only. Those on the line that are non-media, we do have a stakeholder call that you are welcome to participate later this afternoon at 2:30 p.m. The details of that are also on the website. And so we'll begin with that, operator, with the first question from the media.
If you would like to ask a question, please dial #2 to be placed into the question queue. You will hear a notification when your line is unmuted. Once unmuted, please state your name and question. If you would like to take yourself out of the queue, you may do so by dialing #2 a second time. And we do have several questions in the queue. We'll move to our first one. Caller, your line is unmuted.
Hi, if you could please introduce yourself and your organization.
Hello.
Hello, we can hear you. If you can introduce yourself and your organization.
Yes, hi. It's Elizabeth McCarthy with California Current. So my question is, with the high levels of coal power in Pacific Core's portfolio and the fact that California and some other western states have flat loads, how are we going to get cleaner power in California and across the grid, a western grid?
Well, I guess I'll start with with California's RPS goal, you're going to see significant increased development of renewable resources pursuant to that goal. You also have other states throughout the West who have RPS goals. Most of the states throughout the West have ambitious RPS goals. So you're going to see a lot of renewable development happening with these RPS initiatives. But what we've also seen, looking at the historical experience with other big regional markets, such as the Mid-Continent ISO and the Southwest Power Pool, is you see with this large regional market footprint a lot of non-RPS-driven renewable development that is enabled by having a seamless platform for consumers, large consumers, utilities, to transact with renewable resources from long distances apart that, absent a regional market, it just wouldn't be practical or cost-effective to be able to do those transactions. So we've seen in the last 5 years, you know, over half the renewable development in these regions is non-RPS driven. So we think this regional market will provide a platform for renewable development to flourish. And if you couple that with the coal retirements that are already planned, and there are a lot of planned coal retirements over the next decade and a half, there's going to be a lot of displacement of coal, and these renewables are going to provide further displacement and economic pressure to accelerate the retirement of remaining coal plants. And we've seen a lot of evidence that is noted in the report of how that's happening in these other regions that, that have this regional market.
Can you explain briefly when you say about the seamless platform, how that would work?
Sure. So if you think about how things work today, you know, we have 38 different what are called balancing areas throughout the West. These are all grid operators that operate their little piece of the system. And if you want to transact energy from remote distances, you often have to traverse multiple balancing areas to get the power from where it's generated to where it's consumed. And each of those balancing areas has a toll. There's a cost of using their transmission system. Ultimately, those rates get pancaked. If you have to move power across three or four balancing areas, the cost of doing that is, you know, cumulative, that you get, you hit each toll as you go across. Under a regional market, there's one toll for using the entire footprint. So there's a reduced cost, significantly reduced cost to doing that. There's greater transparency on what the prices are in the market. There's lower integration cost. Each separate balancing area has a cost that it charges for balancing the system and integrating renewables. With a centralized regional market, that cost will go down. So essentially, you're removing some of the cost barriers and providing greater transparency to the opportunities for consumers, and I use that in a broad term, you know, utilities or large consumers of electricity, to identify and procure with these renewable resources that are remotely remote from where they are. You know, we see a lot of evidence of that in the Midwest ISO and SPP, and there's a lot of good references in the report that, that document that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Keith. Next question.
Caller, your line is unmuted.
Hi, caller. If you can please introduce yourself and your organization.
Yeah, this is Rich Namek with Natural Gas Intelligence and Shale Daily.
Hi, Rich. Go ahead and ask your question.
I apologize. I got on the call late. Whom is giving the answers here on the call? Who do we attribute that to?
Keith Casey, C-A-S-E-Y.
Okay.
Keith is Vice President. He's Vice President of Market and Infrastructure Development.
Okay. My question is just a clarification more than a question. Is it fair to say this is another attempt to bolster the percentage of power coming from renewables and continue to decrease the amount of fossil fuel-fired generation, particularly natural gas?
Yeah, Rich, this is Keith. As I stated, I think this, you know, this regional market in the West would provide a platform for enabling that transformation And again, we see a lot of evidence of how that's playing out in the other large regional markets, Mid-Continent ISO and SPP.
But I, this is Steve Berberick, and I'm the CEO of the ISO. Rich, for your benefit. Rich, the other thing to think about, I think, from a gas perspective is that, as Keith had spoken about, that there's going to be retirement, I think, of coal units, and there's going to be displacement likely from a mixed portfolio, I suspect, of gas and renewables themselves. So, you know, I think it's up to the policymakers to decide what that mix is.
So there could be a certain amount of gas to make up, at least for an interim period, for the coal, you're saying?
Well, that's a scenario that's played out in the other areas where there have been coal retirements.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for your question, Rich. Operator, next question.
Caller, your line is unmuted.
Hi, caller. If you can please introduce yourself and your organization.
Hi, it's Rebecca Smith at the Wall Street Journal. I've got a question for you guys about the renewable energy curtailment. You said that perhaps 13,000 megawatts of power could be accessed by 2020. I'm assuming your analysis did not factor in the retirement in future periods of Diablo Canyon. So here's my question. After 2025, when Diablo Canyon is gone, wouldn't that substantially reduce the amount that would be curtailed? I mean, I'm assuming a capacity factor of solar of maybe 20% and wind maybe 30%, so that it looks to me like Diablo Canyon's retirement could actually reduce that amount of curtailment by between 6 and 10,000 megawatts.
Yeah, Rebecca, this is Keith Casey. The long-term studies we've done on renewable curtailment do include the retirement of Diablo Canyon, and even with that, we're still seeing significant renewable curtailments of the magnitude that Steve mentioned, the 13,000 megawatts.
Well, the
and you have to remember Diablo Canyon.
Sorry, 2020. Your number for that was 2020, and Diablo doesn't retire until 2025. So what do you think the curtailments would be after Diablo retires?
Yeah. Well, to clarify, the numbers that Steve cited, the 13,000, were based on an analysis for a 40% RPS, which was around the 2025 timeframe. So it did include consideration of Diablo retiring.
Okay. So if we use that number, then would we say 13,000 megawatts would be excess in 2025? Would that be accurate?
Yeah, that's what the study was based on.
Okay, and just one other follow-up question. How much could storage change those numbers, and do you have any projections on storage?
Yeah, on storage.
The studies included a... the California has a mandate of developing 1,300 megawatts of small-scale storage, and that was assumed in the studies. We also included all the existing pumped hydro storage facilities in California and added as part of the base assumption an assumption that an additional 500 megawatts of large pumped hydro would be developed as well. And I would note in developing the renewable portfolios, the model that was used to do that also had the option of picking additional storage as an alternative to curtailment if it was found cost effective to do that. We didn't see in the analysis very much of that being picked up in the model, but that was part of the study as well.
Okay, thanks, Keith.
Rebecca.
Rebecca, it's Steve, if I could add also. I think it's important in the context of our answering that question to remember that we now have about 4,000 megawatts of distributed generation on the system, and it's growing 11,000 to 13,000 rooftops a month, probably on the order of about 75 megawatts a month. So it continues to grow, which will also be part of the environment where you assess how much overgeneration you will have.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Sure.
Thanks for your question. Operator, next question.
Hi, this is Mark Jaffe from High Country News.
Hi, Mark.
So obviously the study shows that an RTO is a good thing for California, but what about the rest of the region? I'm thinking particularly of those states that start off with lower electricity rates than California and considerably more coal-fired generation. How is this a good deal region? I mean, in total, you can see that it's a good deal, but there are certainly states where there would have to be significant adjustments and dislocations.
Yeah. Mark, it's Steve Erberich. Let me, I guess, answer it this way. Our study was focused on California as directed by the SB 350 legislation. We can give you some perspective that there is great value to the rest of the West, too. I would point you to the PacifiCorp study that was done 18 months ago or so that showed up to, you know, $1 to $3 billion a year. Roughly, I think it was split between California and the rest of the West. So I think you can, if you have a look at that study, you can get an idea on the PacifiCorp footprint, obviously, which Wyoming is part of, to get you some perspective of what benefit may exist. And as it relates to, you know, each state's portfolio, as we look at designing a potential governance structure for a regionalized ISO, it's been abundantly clear to us from each one of the states in the West that they want to make sure that they have complete discretion and autonomy over what kind of resources they mix in and have in that state. That being said, obviously we have the uncertainty of what happens with the Clean Power Plan, I think many studies have indicated that a regional collaboration can help comply with the Clean Power Plan in the most cost-effective way you can.
Okay. And just one
for your question. Go ahead.
Just one follow-up. There's also a group in the West, the Rocky Mountain West Transmission Group, which is looking at making a more efficient transmission system. How does what you're looking at and that, how do they interact, or are they comparable or not comparable, but are they complementary?
Well, Mark, we're aware of the Mountain West Transmission Group RFP. And I think preference would be for you to direct your questions at them. But more broadly, though, I think what it clearly shows is that there is a value proposition to organized markets that clearly is seen in the East. The California is the only Western organized market in the West at this point. And with our energy imbalance market, which is simply a five-minute market, you've seen great value. So what you're, I think, seeing as a result of Mountain West Transmission Group's effort is, hey, they see the value of a market, and they want to explore that. So I think that also shows that, California, if the California ISO is to be part of this environment going forward of a regionalized market, there's some need to be expeditious about it.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Mark, thanks for your question. Thanks for your question. Operator, next question.
Yes, hello. This is David Baker at the San Francisco Chronicle. Thanks for having this call.
Hi, David.
The question I wanted to ask is just sort of the nuts and bolts of it. What steps would actually be required to put together this regional market? Would we need some kind of legislative action amongst the states? Would all these different balance, the 38 different balancing areas, need to come together with the ISO to create a new super ISO? How would we actually get from here to there?
Yeah, that's a super question. And again, this is Steve Berberich speaking for the benefit of all on the phone. Clearly, the current governance model of the ISO is in California statute, and the first step would be that the California legislature decide whether it was in the best interest of California to regionalize the ISO. Now, I will say that there has been a lot of consultation from our governor's office to the other states in the region to gather their input on what a governance model might look like and might be acceptable to them. You may note that the governor of Washington, the state of Washington, recently sent a letter to Governor Brown indicating his support for such a regional grid operator. So it's going to require the states coming together. We make no assumption other than we did in the study that, just to get a bookend, that all of the balancing authorities would likely join our market or a regional market, and that would be left to their discretion to determine what was best for them. But I hearken back to the last question. Mountain West Group is a fairly large footprint in the eastern part of the Western Connect, Interconnect, and they're pursuing a market too. So the desire to have a market in the West is clearly there. The California ISO has the platform. We have the market. We have the technology. And I think we have the opportunity to be able to leverage that for the rest of the West for the benefit of ratepayers both in California and throughout.
Okay. So you would need a state-by-state agreement to join together into a joint marketing governing structure then?
No, I don't believe that's the case. If we were to regionalize the ISO and create a regional board structure, a regional governance model, each utility would then decide whether they wanted to join as a participating transmission owner, much as Oscar had indicated when he first said, we're not merging balancing authorities, and this is not a state-by-state compact. Rather, this is a regional organization, and if the utilities decide they want to join as a PTO, they usually have to seek state public utility commission approval of that. That's how it would proceed.
Okay, got it. Excellent, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, David. Operator, next question, please.
Hi, this is Ann Mulker, reporter with Climate Wire, the wise reporter who just asked about how it would happen. That did one of my questions, but that's great. The next one is, can you just explain a little bit more about the climate impact in terms of how are the emissions being cut by having this regional market?
And this is Keith Casey. I can try to address that. I think the big thing to recognize is that much of the reduction in CO2 emissions that are being projected out through 2020 and 2030 are happening primarily because of RPS policies and coal retirements. Those are the big drivers, the big policy drivers that are, showing this significant trend of substantial CO2 reductions in the West. But there is additional CO2 reductions being shown in our studies with the regional market. And as I mentioned earlier, that's really coming about because the regional market enables more renewables to develop. by virtue of the reasons I explained, that you know, by having this large seamless platform for entities to transact with renewable resources all over the West, you're going to see a lot more development of renewables, and that's going to put further downward pressure on both the dispatch of natural gas and coal, and you know, we think potentially accelerate some additional coal retirements that in the end will have the emissions benefits that we expect to see.
Okay, I just have one follow-up question, which is, you mentioned at the very beginning, and you're sort of talking about it now, development of renewables is outside the RPS. What kind of, can you give me an example of that? What is something that's happening out? Are
yeah.
you saying utility, what the utilities are doing?
Yeah, so what we're seeing in these other regions, you know, such as in the Midwest and Texas, you're seeing basically with the cost declines in renewable technologies like wind and solar, oftentimes a utility will put out a request for bids to meet a generation need that it has, and renewables are actually competing against gas plants and winning in those procurement processes. They're also attractive from a diversity standpoint that, you know, when utilities look at their portfolio of resources, they don't want to have too much in one fuel type and be exposed to the natural gas price spikes. So it provides some diversity to their portfolio. So that those decisions are not because of some RPS mandate. They're just economic type driven decisions that the utilities are making. We're also seeing, you know, big companies like Google is probably a good example, and Amazon, that they're, you know, they're looking to identify their own portfolio of resources to meet their energy needs, and they want that portfolio to be green. So you're seeing a lot of large companies going out and directly procuring with renewable resources. So those are just a couple of the examples of, you know, how some of this, what we call non-RPS-driven renewable development is happening.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for your question, Ann. Operator, we have about 5 minutes left, so probably time for one or two more questions. Next question, please.
Hi, this is Jeff McDonald.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Jeff McDonald at the San Diego Union Tribune. I wanted to ask.
Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. Thank you. I know that regionalizing the grid has been a policy goal for utilities since the 1990s, long before there were renewable standard requirements. And I'm wondering why it's a good idea for California to give up direct oversight of the grid after this transition, if it's approved by the legislature. Given that some of the companies involved were guilty of price manipulating in 2000 and 2001.
Jeff, I think the world has come a long way since 2000, 2001.
Is this
Steve? Yep, this is Steve.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Yep. You know, in the world in 2000, 2001, it was largely dominated by spot market transactions, and I'm sure you're quite familiar with how the market was designed back then. Whereas now, it's largely dominated by bilateral transactions with the imbalances and associated with energy traded in the markets. So, you know, the specter of an energy crisis kind of situation is virtually impossible with the advent of long-term bilateral contracts that exist today. And what I think California has to consider from a policy perspective is that, and I looked, and as I said in my opening comments, I looked to models in other areas of how they've done this and how it works. And I think California aspirations to decarbonize the grid are much greater than a 50% RPS.
to really decarbonize the grid and, in fact, the broader economy, you have to go to a higher RPS than 50%. And we need to do that, I think, as cost-effectively and as efficiently as we can. We see, like in Europe, where they've collaborated significantly on a regional basis, they're able to really amp up their renewable portfolios. So if, let's say we use the base case where we continue to operate just within California, we're going to have limited ability to be able to export that renewable portfolio, that renewable power, and we're going to be in a position where we're curtailing, as we indicated earlier, you know, excess of 10,000 megawatts of power at a time over, you know, large periods of time of the year. And the study we did that Dr. Casey was talking about was a 2025. We're at a, you know, roughly a 40% RPS. We're looking at a 50% RPS. And I don't think it makes societal or economic sense to turn off zero carbon, zero marginal cost power so frequently. And I think the opportunity to sell that power out of state without the friction that I think Dr. Casey talked quite eloquently about earlier and described allows renewables to flourish in California and out. And I think that's the opportunity that exists here. California will clearly be able to maintain its discretion over its portfolios. So I think we have the opportunity to protect California's discretion and indeed the other states' discretions, much like the other multi-state ISOs do. And we have the opportunity to be like Iowa. It troubles me that California, with its forward-leaning environmental policy, is being surpassed by these other states. But if Iowa can go to 85%, they can because they're part of the Mid-Continent ISO. California can too. So that's the value proposition, Jeff.
Just as a follow-up, I guess I'm not understanding a couple of things. You're saying that we rely mostly on bilateral contracts. Those wouldn't be affected by regionalizing the grid, whatever, unless I'm misunderstanding it. And
right.
Can you explain that? Right. Did I misunderstand
you? You were harkening back to the 2000-2001 crisis. I was trying to draw a distinction about what exists today versus then.
Right, but this has been a policy goal of the utilities for decades, and right now you're promoting it as an opportunity to meet the RPS. And what I'm asking is, if the idea was being promoted in the 90s and went by the wayside after the deregulation fiasco, then why are we back promoting the same policy agenda that the utilities have been gunning for 20-plus years?
Well, I can't speak to the utilities gunning for this. I think that the changed environment where we're on a path to decarbonizing the grid is what's made this an important objective in California. It's not an aspirational target. It's not a utility objective. This is clearly something that is positive from an economic perspective, from a jobs perspective, and from an environmental perspective. And I would ask the question is, why wouldn't you pursue that if California can continue to protect its discretion on how it wants to frame its portfolios and pursue renewables? And I can't think of a more forward leaning renewable focused country than Germany, and the first thing they tell us is you've got to operate regionally. They leverage the hydro system in Norway to help facilitate the renewables. When there's overgeneration, Norway can turn down their hydro. It's a beautiful orchestration from a regional perspective. And then the final thing I would say, Jeff, is that we need to be concerned about the costs of this.
And I think we have the opportunity to find a way to bend that cost curve so that we can continue on this path that California is on. So those are my thoughts.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll have one more question. We're a little over time, but we'll have one last question and conclude. So, operator, last call.
Hi, this is Emma Penrod with the Salt Lake Tribune.
Hi, Emma.
Hey, a question about something you mentioned earlier. You mentioned that you have a formal proposal in the works. So I'm wondering what the timeline for that formal proposal is. And given your earlier statements, what does that proposal involve regarding these transmission use tolls? Will the participating transmission owners lose their authority to set their own rates?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Emma, this is Keith Casey. I think what you're alluding to is the governance proposal, that we'll have a proposal for that forthcoming. And you're right that is part of the overall SB 350 process, is both the study work and the development of a new regional governance framework for the legislature to consider. That's still a bit of a work in progress in terms of where we're at with it. As you probably know, there were a couple of public workshops held in June. We received over 42 comments on that governance proposal, and we're now in the process of reviewing those comments and revising the proposal, and with a goal towards posting a revised proposal by June 15th. And then, of course, July, getting a proposal out in mid-July in advance of the workshop that we're scheduling on July 26. So that's kind of where we stand on the governance proposal. With regard to your question about transmission costs, that is a big issue with growing this regional market, is as new entities consider joining. We have to sort out how we'll deal with transmission costs, both for existing transmission as well as new transmission. We have a policy initiative that's been ongoing for the last 6 months to look at that. I would say that's a work in progress too. But I think that essentially the basic principles will remain in whatever final framework for this we come up with, which is that each area will carry the cost of its existing transmission, and to the extent that new regional transmission is found to be valued to the region, that there would be a sharing of that cost where essentially each region would share in proportion to the benefits they receive from that. So the details of how that regional cost sharing would work out for new transmission is something we're still working through, but I think we're making good progress on advancing that initiative.
So, but these current studies that you are releasing today, they were built with the assumption that the transmission cost would be uniform across the regional network. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, that's right. That there would be, and that would be true. There would be, one rate for moving power across the regional market. Now, if you have subregions with different rates, then the rate would be based on wherever the power is being generated from. But they would only pay one rate. There wouldn't be this pancaking of rates across the region.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks. And before we conclude the call, I just want to let you know that I wanted to thank everybody for participating, Steve and Keith, for participating in the call, and the media that's on the line for your participation. The documents are on the CAISO website at www.caiso.com. You'll see a banner that has the SB 350 study. Click on that, and you'll get not only this current documents, but archived documents as well, so you can see the history of this as we laid this out. Also, if you have any calls on this subject, our media hotline is 888-516-6397. please feel free to call us with any follow-up. So that concludes this morning's call. Thank you again for your participation.